Two personalities debating today's biggest geek topics. This is Project Nerds Versus.
Hey, pro nerds. Welcome to another episode of Versus, only on Project Nerd. I am your host, Iggy, and I am here with your other host, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Project Nerds Tyler. How's it going, Tyler?
What is happening, all you pro nerds out there? I am here to win. Let's do this. I'm excited. There's been a lot of things going on, and we haven't. It's been a couple weeks since we did this. Let's hit some things. Let's do it.
We have a lot to cover, a lot of stuff that I missed putting together in notes, a lot of stuff we missed as we were evaluating here at the beginning too, I'm sure. So as always, head on over to wherever you're getting Project Nerd Podcast, like, subscribe, follow, and of course, leave us that comment and tell us what we're missing or what we got wrong on our opinions. But I think you're right, Tyler. I think it's time to get started with this week's episode of Versus.
What's up first? Let's do it. Give it to me.
All right. Well, there were, like you said, a lot of things going on, but I think the biggest attention definitely came down to basically acquisitions, we'll put it that way, starting with one that hasn't quite happened yet, but definitely in the talks, Amazon possibly picking up MGM. Now, we talked about what the future looks like for the movie and movie theater industries a lot in this podcast and some of our other ones. And we've often alluded to the fact that it seemed inevitable a player like Amazon or maybe Apple, you've even mentioned, would likely buy a theater chain with those struggling. But the events unfolding are actually having Amazon put up to 10, it's a billion. I think I put 10 million in the notes, but it's $10 billion to buy MGM. Big, big price tag. Tell me, Tyler, if Amazon doesn't buy this, what does that mean for the likes of Apple, Netflix, and other streaming platforms? And is $10 billion a fair price tag for MGM?
I don't know. Yeah, I've been thinking about this now for a little bit, and I feel like movies, I mean, we're going to talk a lot about studios and this studio owning this studio and this studio getting wrapped up in this one. And Disney bought all of Fox, which actually included 17 different studios. MGM, I think, gets a bigger, not to say that MGM hasn't made some amazing movies even recently, but MGM, I think, has a little bit more cachet just in the sense of like, they're one of the, I mean, MGM's first movie came out in like 1924. Like they are one of the old guards. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, The Lion Roar is like one of the bastions of the golden age Hollywood. So it getting, you know, bought, I mean, it's been owned and sold and things multiple times. It's not like this is the first time it's been changed hands, but is a big deal. But it is a big deal, but I don't know that it's any, I don't know how much this changes. I don't know. I don't know how many movies MGM still produces in-house versus how many it buys. Because if you look at most of the movies that they've released within the last few years, almost all of them are co-produced with New Line or Universal or someone else. Like very rarely do you see one studio take a project from beginning to end. Like more often than not now, a movie gets made and then someone buys it after the fact. So obviously there's a lot of infrastructure that Amazon or whoever pays this price tag is getting it. $10 billion in the terms of current like media conglomerates is a drop in the bucket, I think. So is MGM, is the intellectual property alone you're going to get and the back catalog alone enough? Like if nothing else, you're getting a back catalog to put on your streaming service that's worth something. So I mean, like $10 billion is probably a deal, but I don't know. What's the biggest movie that MGM's put out in the last, the Creed movies? Probably, I would have to say maybe.
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, technically, Bond will be theirs, but that's like co-production with Eon and Universal. It's not just MGM, but I think Creed is probably their biggest like series or like set of movies of the last couple of years, maybe.
Right. No, I think it's huge on, you're right, they're going to get a stake in the Bond franchise, but it's important to mention. I know Sony has had more and more control over what's happening there. But I think something we're missing here is what Amazon could get on the television side. I don't know what it means, so I definitely don't want to speak in certainties, but if Amazon does acquire MGM, what does this mean for The Handmaid's Tale, for Vikings, for, let me see, there was one more one, The Fargo TV show, and then of course the Stargate franchise, which I don't think we have a TV show currently, but we've had a lot of success with that Stargate franchise. So a lot of content that is in other hands, and I don't know what that does for contracts there, or at least duplicates those shows over on Amazon Prime. the thing with Amazon Prime, we talked about, is the same thing with Apple, is you mentioned this is a drop in the bucket. They make all this money elsewhere. So come in and buy this. This is a great weapon to say, oh, $10 billion is nothing to get how many more subscribers to Amazon Prime? Because when you're subscribed to Amazon Prime, then you start using the, you know, the books, the music, the shipping service, everything. You're bringing in more business elsewhere. I think the other part of the question too, which I'll bounce it back to you again too, because we didn't talk about it. What does this leave for Apple and Netflix? I can think of Lionsgate might be something we start talking about this next end of the year. What are some of the other small players two out there that have just been waiting to be acquired as the movie industry has been struggling, obviously, the past year, and Hollywood is looking more and more like other industries to where it's just more and more giant corporations owning all the brands?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who else is out there who's on the market. Obviously, I think there's probably a lot of studios on the market that you don't realize it, just because whatever else you said, this last year was real rough for the media industry. Like, they're just, you know, butts in seats is the long and short of it. Like, I don't know. But yeah, like someone like that, some of those smaller studios, I definitely think you could see getting picked up. But I also think a lot of those studios are just looking to move a lot of that stuff in-house, as opposed to like buying an existing set of executives and infrastructure and people. It's just like, we're just going to back dump trucks up of money to creatives. And then tell them, hey, come make stuff for us. We'll start our own studio and do it that way. I think if there's anything that we've learned over the last year or two in the media landscape, is you don't need the traditional studio system to make a successful movie and get eyeballs on it. It's nice, but you can definitely do it without those. Like, the money and the infrastructure and the expertise is good, but at the same time, like, if you've got a big enough idea, there's enough players in the game now where someone's going to find the money for you, and then you can go do whatever you need to do. So I don't know. I think it's interesting, and I'm curious to see where it goes, but I don't know the answer to that question. I don't even know who's on the, I mean, it's one of those things where you don't really know those places are for sale until they're for sale. So,
right. The only one I can think of right now is Lionsgate. And as I'm trying to look here at mini majors, one thing that did jump out to me when we're talking about what does MGM hold, Orion Pictures and United Artists, which still have
United Artists properties. Yeah. And United Artists is like technically their distribution company now too. So like, United is a studio, but also distribution. So, and that's the other problem about it, is when you start digging into like the classic old school studio houses of Hollywood, they all consolidated back in the day as well. So like United Artists and New Line Cinema, and like, they're all under this roof. And then this one got sold to that one. And then this one got sold there, but they kept these two movies and spun off this one. So sometimes it's just hard to tell, like, when you buy MGM, what are you actually getting? So,
right. And I think it's a big thing that you mentioned too, to keep in mind, is that so many of these mid-major, smaller studios have had to partner with the big guys for these huge film franchises, especially if they've held on to them. So there's standing contracts, as we mentioned with Bond and others. So I think the biggest thing here that Amazon is doing is to get that catalog, to put it on Amazon Prime. Because again, if I'm paying for Prime for video, I might as well start using the shipping. I might as well use the Amazon Music. I might, you know, things like that. So I think it's just a business move, which makes me think Apple could be the one that we see do something big next. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what Apple's next move is. I mean, I think this move by Amazon was more of a response to Disney Plus, HBO Max, Paramount Plus, and less to Apple Netflix sort of thing. I would not be surprised if Netflix and Apple just continue to do things the way they do. I think this is more Amazon trying to compete with less the original stuff. And Amazon original stuff is a very mixed bag. Like, there's a stuff that people like go nuts for, whether it's Man in the High Castle or this Lord of the Rings thing they're working on, or possibly the Wheel of Time thing they're working on. But then for that, there's like every time, like, you know, they've got something like The Boys that's just like critically acclaimed left and right. So, but I definitely think this is more of a response to the Disneys, the HBOs, the Paramounts, and less the Apples. And I don't know, Apple, when it's all said and done, I think the long and short of it is Apple's game is, we're doing this to get people in and keep people in our ecosystem. It's less about we could care less how much money we make, how well we do against Amazon or HBO Max. We care, like, right. did people buy more iPhones and Apple TVs because of it? So,
yeah, good point. So, and a good point too, as you mentioned, we don't know what's on sale till it's on sale. So it could be a long time before we see something else. Cause to just remind, as I'm digging through stuff, I do am reminded that MGM has been something that's talked about for a while. James Bond has even been talked about as something being sold separately for MGM to make some money. Yep. And Apple has been one of those in the conversations, but I don't know. I don't know. What else do we have going on?
Like you said, it's been, I think this last year has caused a lot of upheaval and it's not over yet. So like Amazon buying MGM is one thing. We've also heard now that what started as like a bunch of rumors over the weekend quickly turned into AT&T is announced on Monday that all of Warner Media, including HBO, is getting spun off and added to Discovery or Discovery Plus, mashing it all together. The deal's not going to be done until next year, but executives already shared that HBO Max, Discovery Plus would become one streaming entity. Is a good move for brands involved? Would this drive future mergers and the ever-changing landscape of streaming? I don't know. Is this just more AT&T realizing we didn't do this right or we need to get out of this and just spin off Warner Media into its own thing? Because, I mean, it definitely, the, you know, the main executive who was spearheading the like day and date stuff and stuff, like he's already apparently negotiating his exit. This feels like it just was like AT&T's like, we picked the wrong gear to get into this business and we are getting out as quickly as possible.
Well, I think a big part, that's a good thing to bring up, because a big part of this deal is going to be debt being split in this company. So AT&T removes a lot of debt from the AT&T company. And you're exactly right. Stakeholders will get money out of it or get a chance to have ownership in both. But this basically makes Warner Media a whole separate company. And by splitting that debt, you know, the debt's still there, but it looks less, and it makes stakeholders and stockholders happier, I guess is the way to put it. I think, however, this is even a bigger response to Disney Plus, to Netflix, to things like that than the Amazon MGM deal. I feel Amazon's MGM deal is closer to what you were saying for Apple. What's ways we can just get more stuff on in our brand because we want you to use Amazon from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. And I think this one is more of, we noticed what Disney had that just came out of nowhere and kind of became a quick number two. And as Netflix is starting to, I think we talked about it almost a couple months ago now, they're starting to lose some of that, you know, market share. I think this might be the right time for that move. So I think it's just a perfect storm altogether. I think Discovery is at a plateau. There's a lot of great content there. I don't want to say that it's not a good network and not potential for growth, but I think there's only so much you could do with that, and rolling it into something that also has, you know, narrative and scripted stuff and things like that, I think is a good move on the Discovery side too. I think a lot of people are going to get rich, but I do agree with what you were kind of leading into, and I'm sure you'll speak more on, is I think the biggest thing here was for AT&T on a business side, because before I closed, just, was it a week, 2 weeks ago where we saw, they dropped Yahoo and AOL, what was that? And then Comcast has been shedding a lot of these, like you said, these content channels that had bought up a lot of content. I don't even know the words I'm looking for. These companies that delivered you the content, that bought up the content themselves, are starting to question certain things of those. There you go.
I think another piece of it is, and this, I think, all falls back on Warner Media, is they, I don't know, for better or for worse, they very much fragmented all of their brands, if you will, like all of their different segments of content. Whereas you look at Disney Plus took literally everything they have, whether it be Fox TV, whether it be The Simpsons, The Muppet Show, every Disney movie ever, whatever, and threw it all onto one giant service and said, here's literally everything we have. Whereas at one point we had HBO, the channel, HBO, the streaming service, Cinemax, DC Unlimited, the Cartoon Network streaming service. They also technically have, like, through Warner Media, Adult Swim, and then it's Turner, so they own the Looney Tunes, and then the Sesame Workshop, and then the Turner Classic Movies through the Turner thing. Plus, they have a partnership, basically own Crunchyroll at this point. Like, and we saw with, like, they killed DC Unlimited, folded all into HBO Max. I think there's something to be said for folding all of these things into one service. It's not confusing. Like, do I need to pay for my DC Unlimited and for my HBO Max subscription and then online streaming through Adult Swim? Plus I have a Country Roll subscription, or can I just write you a check for one thing like I do for Disney and get access to everything Disney has, everything Hulu has, and everything ESPN has for one low price? Like, why is that? Why did you want to? I don't know what the logistics were. I think they very quickly realized, oh, we should just throw all this stuff onto one service and call it a day. So they right. definitely fragmented the bet player base. I mean, the viewer base there, I think. And I think this is a course correction in that. Same thing with it. I mean, it's, we saw the same thing with Paramount Plus. There was the CBS All Access, which was partially just branding, whatever. But then around the Super Bowl, they said, nah, we're just going to take literally everything under the Paramount umbrella, whether it be on CBS or anything else, every movie, every television show, everything that we own the rights to, and we're going to put it in one app. And then you pay one subscription and you get that, as opposed to trying to like, they, I think they're finally catching on. Oh, people have fatigue. People are starting to cancel the service they don't use right. much because they subscribe to 17 of them now, and it's more than their cable bill used to be. Maybe we should simplify this if we want to not be the one that gets kicked to the curb.
Right, exactly. And to build on that a little bit, as I was trying to look at some things here. So 50 billion in debt will be moved to the new whatever Warner Media Discovery company will be, and AT&T will receive $43 billion subject to adjustment to pay off the debts they do retain. So this is a genius move, both on the sense, like you said, we need to simplify these streaming platforms, make them big giants that have everything you want, but also AT&T is not, you're not number one in really anything right now, right? Like, so this is a good way to like, let's get some money sorted and try to regroup and be who we used to be, I guess, as a company. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things where when you look at it from the outside, you realize that Warner Brothers, or rather Warner Media, owns HBO, Warner Brothers, the CW, DC, Spyglass. I mean, they own TV channels alone. They own basically everything Turner, TMZ, Adult Swim. I mean, they own all the Cartoon Network. They own all the Warner Brothers back library of Looney Tunes and stuff like that. Like we said, they own all of DC, which means they own all of Wildstorm and Black Label. I mean, they have all these assets, and it's split Cinemax and TBS and TNT and True TV and Turner Sports and CNN. And it's split between 17 different things that you have to do to watch it. Whereas like, oh, I can just pay for one and I could just watch the one thing. Yeah, that's what you need to do now. So right. Like Crunchyroll and Rooster Teeth. I forgot they own Rooster Teeth, which is now on Crunchyroll. Like content from Rooster Teeth is on Crunchyroll, and you can watch some Crunchyroll stuff on your HBO Max subscription. But if you want the really Crunchyroll subscription, you have to pay them and Rooster Teeth. Like what the, I don't. Yeah, this is, hopefully this works off. Hopefully this works for them, you know?
And on the Discovery side, again, if you mentioned, like, if I'm paying for 12 different apps, am I paying $15 a month for just Discovery and the Learning Channel content? Nope. Probably not. But if you put it into HBO with all that other stuff, some stuff we're about to talk about here the rest of the episode, yeah. too.
Well, yeah. And here's the thing. I will be willing to give HBO Max more money if I know that it's all of HBO Max, all of Crunchyroll, all of Cinemax, all of Warner Brothers, all of DC, all of Cartoon Network, all, if I know all, every Looney Tunes cartoon, if I know all that stuff is in one app, I'm willing to pay more than $10-$15 a month for it because it's a bigger collection. So they want to get that Disney Plus, they want to get that Disney Plus premium pricing, and to do it, they right. got to dump a lot of stuff into one box. So
right. Well, speaking of that Disney Plus premium pricing, one thing HBO and Warner Brothers was doing was not charging extra to bring their movies day and date to HBO Max when they were releasing them in theaters, a move that seemed questionable at first. A lot of the partnering studios, as we've mentioned in the first deal, had problems with, people had questions about. A lot of things have changed, so I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot. And again, this part right here is not 100% confirmed yet, but it looks like starting in the fall, specifically with Dune, that Warner Brothers is going to walk that back. And their movies will now get 45 days in theaters, then go to HBO Max, then be released on physical and other platforms. A big change, and still very different from what their plans are in 2022. So I don't know, is this due to an underwhelming box office haul? Is this due to the changes in the pandemic and the world kind of opening back up this summer? What are some of the driving factors for HBO to, or excuse me, Warner to go, we need to change this decision already?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all those things. I think it's all those pieces together. Cause like, we already knew that even at, like, they had already kind of backpedaled. Cause even after all the announcements, they had already made the deal with Regal that we knew started in 2022, there was going to be that 45-day window, but it wasn't going to start until next year. This one, dialing it back specifically for Dune, I think is more about them kind of placating the, what do you want to, the creative community, the above the line talent and filmmakers who had were made those 17 films specifically. I think a big chunk of this is them placating Legendary, because Legendary was obviously the one, like, is the muscle, the money behind Dune and behind people like Christopher Nolan and stuff like that, who were like, the F you say, you're doing what with our movie? Like,
right.
And I think, and I mean, everyone remembers when this announcement came out, Christopher Nolan, Denis Villeneuve, everyone flipped out. They're like, No, that's not the deal we had. And there's reasons for that. There's some reasons are creative. Some of them are, I have points on my contract and you're now not going to put it in a theater. What does that even, you know? So that kind of stuff is I think part of it. But I think the biggest reason, and like, as I was reading about this, is Legendary financed 75% of Dune. So I don't know how the math works out, but I feel like they probably need it to go to theaters. Like, they, unless Warner's, I don't know how you cut the check when it doesn't go to theaters. If Legendary footed 75% of the budget to make this movie, and then after the fact, the distributor's like, oh, by the way, we're not actually going to put it in theaters. We're going to put it on our streaming service. Like, I think that's a big part of it. But I think also a part of it is theaters are opening up again. Customers want to go to movies, theaters again. And when it's all said and done, I don't know the numbers behind it, but you still have to, movies still make more money in theaters, right? Like the money you're making on the streaming, you've already made, and you're just driving new subscribers. Like, I like you said, you listed a lot of reasons. I think all of them are part of it, but I think a big part of it is placating the Chris Nolans, the Legendaries, the Denis Villeneuve, the Patty Jenkins, like all these people who just got, who after the went and made a movie with certain expectations, and after the fact, they were like, psych.
Yeah. No, I think too is we're looking at it in an odd year, normally summer, and there's going to be blockbusters released this summer, but normally your biggest action blockbusters are released this summer. It's very clear Warner pushed those for the fall, and Dune, The Matrix, you know, in the winter even, are some of those big ones. Those are not going to do as well, I think, if you keep them hybrid. And there's another thing that keeps coming back to me when we're talking about this, of talks we had on the Nerdcast, talks we've had on Versus. I, being me, and even vaccinated now, am still very picky about what I'm going to see in theaters. If I don't have a choice, there are some of these movies I want to see one way or the other. And if you're forcing me back into the theater, I'm more likely to do it than if I have the option to just sit at home and log in. Now, Dune, we've joked about, was a movie that all of us from the Nerdcast crew were going to go see, even if it meant us catching the coronavirus. But that doesn't mean that everybody else felt that way. And you saw what happened to Tenet. I feel like part of Tenet's negative press comes from it not having as many people going to see it in the theater. I feel my experience the first time could have been less underwhelming if I would have actually seen it in theater where it was intended to be seen than on my TV, where I could barely hear it. Cause that was even before I had my new sound system. So I was like, what is even going on with the noise here? I think there, you're right. All those other factors we were just talking about, but I think there's so many more other factors. I do want to confirm before we get angry comments on YouTube about this. So Deadline reported this is the case, but we've had places such as IndieWire and stuff saying, hold on, this isn't true yet. So it is up in the air, but it's really looking like maybe not if with Dune, which I still think it's going to be Dune, at some point HBO is going to go back on this plan. Because ultimately, like you said 75% was what Legendary...
Legendary financed 75% of the movie, and Legendary doesn't like own a stake in HBO Max. Like that doesn't, I don't. And here's the thing. I don't know what those contracts look like between Legendary and HBO and our Warner Media and what the distribution deal is and how they get points back in the dollars. But when it's all said and done, like we waited to this movie and agreed for you to put it in theaters only for you to after the fact be like, actually, we're going to go show it in our backyard and charge tickets there. and only people who come to are willing to come to our house to watch it. Do I get any of that money? No. You don't own my house. No, that's not how that works.
No, because these people are paying to come visit for the week, not just the movie. Exactly. No, you're right. Like it's. I think it made it really messy. And I don't know. I really am interested to see what happens in the next few weeks, because we've got the likes of what Cruella, Fast Nine and stuff that might make us see a clearer box office picture.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think, and then we kind of talked about it a little bit before with all these media companies, the Apples and the Amazons of the world dumping backing dump trucks full of money up to creators' house. Listen, you might make a ton of new subscribers to HBO Max by doing this to Tenet or doing this to Dune, but guess who's never making another movie for your studio again? Denny Villeneuve or Christopher Nolan or Patty Jenkins, they're walking across the street to Apple and saying, here you go, you know, and throwing, I mean, like, you can't burn these bridges. Like, if Warner Brothers never gets to release another Nolan movie again, like, that's not going to look good. You know, cool. We bumped the share price for this quarter, but we've now lost future earnings of billions of dollars because he will never make a movie for us ever again.
So. Right. No, it's a good, solid point. All right.
All right. Well, like, let's, I didn't even know the show was being made, and now all this news dropped today and I'm kind of excited. So for those of you who aren't aware, there is a TV show at Netflix called Wednesday, as in Wednesday Addams. And Jenna Ortega has been cast in the lead role as Wednesday Addams. It's a new live action series, which gives Wednesday basically her own young adult television series. So as it turns out, the person basically running or at least directing the first 8 episodes is none other than Mr. Tim Burton himself, the king of the campy macabre. So the synopsis, basically, the series is a sleuthing, supernaturally infused mystery charting Wednesday Addams' years as a student at Nevermore Academy. Wednesday's attempts to master her emerging psychic ability, thwart a monstrous killing spree that has terrorized the local town, and solve the supernatural mystery that has embroiled her parents 25 years ago, all while navigating her new and very tangled relationships at Nevermore. So very, very young adult, young adult television sounding. Are we in on this? Is Burton the right call? Will this lead to other similar spinoffs of older series? What do you think? There's a lot to unpack there.
There is a lot to unpack too, because I don't think this was very much on my radar as well, which I think was surprising. One, I'm not the target audience, so am I in on this? It doesn't matter. My daughter absolutely loved the new animated film of the Addams Family. She's super excited for the sequel. And of course, her being a 10-year-old girl, who's her favorite character in that film franchise? Wednesday Addams. This is perfect for her. And this has got Harry Potter-ish, you know, all over it with the Nevermore Academy stuff like that. We're probably going to see cameos from other Addams Family members that we're excited to see. But I don't know. I'm over the Tim Burton thing. Like, when is the last time Tim Burton has impressed us? Maybe he'll do it here. If there's anything I would say, what would you put Tim Burton on? If you had to put him on something, it would be an Addams Family project, probably. So I'm kind of over it. Will this bring other things? I think so. I think we're already seeing it, but I think if this is successful, you know, maybe we see some Munsters stuff. Maybe we see some other Addams Family stuff. I don't know, but I'm interested. Jenna Ortega looks the part. I think you have an audience that is eager for this stuff. Sabrina was a little darker than probably expected for that age group. So we'll see where it goes. But big part for me personally, until Tim Burton proves it otherwise, I'm kind of over him right now and what he's doing.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, he is amazing and has made some amazing movies, many of which I love. The issue is there's been some duds. I've still never seen Dumbo, and nothing I've heard about it makes me want to see Dumbo. And there's a lot of people in it I really like. I have no desire to see it. And I love that movie as a child. No desire to see it. Miss Peregrine's Home was okay. Dark Shadows I really liked, but in a weird, campy way. Alice in Wonderland was rough and hard to watch. Corpse Bride is probably the last thing he made that I'm like, yeah, that was awesome. Maybe. I didn't like his Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I don't know how much of that was him and how much of that was Johnny Depp doing, I guess, like a Michael Jackson impression or something. I don't know. but if he can capture some of like the wonder of like a big fish, like I'm on board for sure. Like, I mean, he's made some amazing movies that I love, and I don't want to say that he's, you know, not going to do a good job. I mean, I'm curious. Here's the thing. It's on Netflix. I'm not going to not watch it. So I hope it's good. I'm excited for it. It's like a cool. And here's the thing. If it, like you said, if it does well, it's going to open the door for other adaptations of things of this nature, which is good. Like, you know, Hollywood never saw an idea that worked once that they didn't think would work twice, three times, or four times. So it's going to happen. Sure. So even if this doesn't work, it's not going to stop Pugsley from coming out 4 years later. So
that's very true.
Or Fester, you know, like it's not like the, not like it not doing well will stop them. So
I just, I want more Snoop Dogg as Cousin It, as we saw in the animated movie. he showed up in his lowrider blaring, actual Snoop Dogg music. So it was perfect.
I'm 100% on board.
Right. So this week alone, in my last podcast that went live on Wednesday or today, it was, I had to switch my glasses midway through and hear my headphones were dying. So I switched my headphones midway through. So it's a week of transitions for me here with my headgear, I guess. So anyways, I think it's exciting. Let's move on. I almost lost track of
myself. Like you said, we're not the target audience for this.
Right.
I hope it does well, and I hope that it's good. How about that?
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you for helping me get my bearings back straight. So let's talk Kamil Nanjiani, who I know we both enjoy. He's best known for his role in Silicon Valley, obviously. But The Big Sick, I think, was that 2018, 2019, a sleeper hit and one of my favorite movies of that year. Obviously, we've seen him getting jacked for The Immortals, and we even talked about it last week when that, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me, when that footage premiered. Now he's set to star as the founder of Chippendales in the new movie Immigrant. This really got me thinking and kind of wanted me to pose the question. Nanjiani is kind of popping up left and right, and especially in some geeky stuff. Obviously, Chippendales not as geeky, but still a pop culture phenomenon that club was. Really interested to see his role here as he's doing more and more dramatic. We've now seen him behind the scenes working stuff. Is Nanjiani our newest rising star here in Hollywood? What do you think, Tyler?
I mean, I'm a big Kumail Nanjiani fan. I think my first exposure to him, I don't know which came first, The Indoor Kids on the Nerdist Network, where him and Emily did a podcast that was literally just about them playing video games and loving video games. He was also, and I only watched it 100% because of Mark Paul Gosselaar, but there was a short-lived television show on TNT called Franklin and Bash, and he was a main character on it. Did like 30 episodes. I think the first time I remember seeing him on. But he's done, like, he showed up. He's been a stand-up comedian for years. If you're familiar with, like, he used to do a show at Meltdown that was really popular. He was a character on Adventure Time. Anytime he popped up on Portlandia, I was always real excited about it. His Portlandia character is fantastic. But yeah, I mean, I am a fan of Kumail. I want only good things for him, so I hope that cool things happen for him. So I don't know, here's the thing. I don't know that we can say next, because obviously it's happened. Obviously, you know, his movie The Big Sick was huge. Obviously he's in a Disney movie. He's in a, not only a Disney movie, a Marvel movie. He was in a big He was in a big Netflix movie with the Lovebirds, and he's going to be in a Disney Plus Star Wars television show. So I think he's already there. I think he has succeeded. He has reached the top of the mountain. So,
all right.
He's in a Marvel movie and he's in the Obi-Wan television show. What more could someone who is a fan of the things Kumail is a fan of do better than that?
That's fair. If you had a podcast on a network called The Nerdist and you got to be of those things, I'm sure you are very pleased with where your career has gone. Great points. I don't know if I'd say he's there yet, because we're still waiting on those things to be released, but I would agree. As I mentioned, as I open this up, we're both huge fans of him. I think he's fantastic. And I'm not familiar with his podcast that much. I've heard you bring it up before, but anything I've seen him in, otherwise, he's been great in. I almost forgot about the Lovebirds, but it was actually charming. I think it was pretty good for what it was. And yeah, I'm really excited to see him both in, you know, Obi-Wan and in Immortals. The Big Sick, still, I can't get over it. But all I'm thinking of here is going beyond just Nanjiani himself. What is happening with Master of None with Aziz Ansari? It kind of relates to what we saw with Jordan Peele. We saw this funny man in front of the camera kind of get behind the scenes and start expanding his career and doing something, and doing it as a person that doesn't usually get that opportunity, as a minority, as, you know, these are Indian Americans we're talking in now about with Aziz and Nanjiani. So it's
Pakistani
really exciting.
American. Sorry, Pakistani
for him. Yes. It's these are Asian Americans is a better way to put it. Apologies. And it's exciting to see this growth. And as excited as I am for Master of None, I'm as excited for what Nanjiani is going to do. I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's on the cusp. And I think with strong performances, even if they're smaller roles in the Marvel and Star Wars projects mixed with everything else he's working on, I think we have a plus here. And I hope to see him in future award ceremonies. Hopefully more writing, because I very, very much love The Big Sick.
If you have access to Disney Plus, I mean, not Disney Plus, sorry, Apple TV Plus, him and his wife also produced a limited series anthology for them called Little America. And it's all stories about immigrants to America based on articles from a magazine. And they're fantastic. So if you have Apple TV Plus and you've never watched Little America, you should check it out.
Definitely.
I don't know. He also does a lot of voice acting. I always, every time, every now and then, I can always pick his voice out when he picks, shows up in like,
oh yeah,
Bob's Burgers or Aqua Teen Hunger Force or I loved the TV show Ugly Americans that was only ran for like two seasons. He was on
I didn't see that one.
He did an episode of Archer. Whenever he shows up as a voice, I always get excited. So
for sure.
And he got to be in X-Files, which he also did a podcast just about X-Files, and he got to be on that show too. So
I think he's already won. He's pretty happy with his life. I would be happy with what he's done, but I don't know. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Fair enough. So we already talked a little bit about Marvel earlier, but Marvel made a big announcement that the new Black Panther series from screenwriter John Ridley, best known for 12 Years a Slave. Now Ridley has written comics before. Most popular, he did a really popular Wolverine arc, but this is a series that's in the spotlight. And it's interesting that Marvel is going to a screenwriter instead of a comic writer. I say that, but at the same time, like, Marvel's done a lot of really, I don't know that anyone thought of Ta-Nehisi Coates as necessarily Ta-Nehisi Coates as like a comic book writer who wrote Black Panther for a while and was a hugely successful run. So Marvel's done a lot of this, like, you wouldn't expect this person to write for comics, but has. But that's being said, although it's not completely unrelated, this reminds me of like Kevin Smith wrote a lot of comic books. He's now working on Masters of the Universe for Netflix, the stills of which look fantastic. I am super, they finally got some images from it. So excited. But anyway, geeky content continues to become more mainstream, and these characters are now presented to us in a such variety of ways. Are we at a point that writing is just considered writing in regards to pulp culture and Hollywood content? I think we've been there for a while, but give me your take.
So I wanted to pose this because that's where I felt, and I knew you would have a lot of ones that you could mention specifically. We've seen in back in the day, and Kevin Smith was another reason it came up in my mind, is because of him covering Batman. It was such a big deal. And part of it is Kevin Smith makes it such a big deal because he's such a fanboy himself, and he makes it a big deal to his fans. But other parts of it is not. I feel like that these, the medians, the way we're getting these characters are also intertwined and all getting so closer and closer to similar, the way the storytelling is, that I think even though we've seen it some in the past, that we're getting to the point to where these are just storytellers. Do we have screenwriters anymore? Do we have comic writers? We have storytellers. And if you're a great storyteller but don't know how to adapt it to the screen, that's where you get a co-writer that then comes in and makes it right. Or the same vice versa for a comic book. You have somebody come in, maybe even ghostwrite things like that for books and stuff. But I think we're at a point to where we're just at a storytelling age again, which to me is super exciting. And I know it's going to be exciting to you, and you're going to talk excitement about it because you love stories. But this makes me think of going way back in time to where, you know, when you talk about tribes and nomadic groups of people, and you had the storyteller of your tribe, and that was passed down to another great storyteller. And I really just see it as we're at a point of telling stories. And that gets me excited because it's not about comics. It's not about books. It's not about movies. It's about, have you heard this cool story? If that makes sense. And it makes it to where it's no longer, I have to only talk about it with these certain friends, which again is another argument, could be we've broken away from this over the past decade, but it's a way to where I can say to anybody I know that likes a good story, hey, you need to check out this comic because it's a good story. But
Yeah, this is a subject about which I could talk about for an entire right. podcast, maybe two or three. But yeah, like you're right. It's like storytellers are king, I think. Like, I do not want to screenwriting a script for a film is a skill. And mm-hmm. the same thing, and it is not the same skill as screenwriting a teleplay for a television show, whether it be a sitcom or a comedy or a drama, which are totally different skills. And that is not the same skill as writing a short story or as writing a novel or writing a comic book. Those are all very different things. But at the same time, there's a bunch to unpack about what it means to, like you said, be a storyteller. For one, maybe not so much with a novel, with a novel, true, but not even so much, and also probably not so much with a comic book, but any sort of thing anymore that's a movie or a television show or any of those sorts of things, there is a writer for each. Someone is the credited writer for the screenplay. Someone's the credited writer for the episode. 90% of those things, it's the number of people whose hand are in that thing, whether it be the director or the right. author or the writer's room for that television show. One person got the credit, but 15 people's fingers are on that paper by the time it like is in front of a camera, not including I mean, there's so much to that. Like, it's really a community effort. One person gets a credit, two people get a credit, but who knows how many people actually had a hand in it. So, and some people, like you said, like they're just good at telling stories. And then sometimes people are better at telling one version of a story than another. For instance, it's been a long, and I think there have been some exceptions to the rule, but for the longest time, everyone was like, yeah, all Stephen King movies are good except for the ones he wrote the screenplay for. So if someone else adapted it to a screenplay, it's a great Stephen King movie. If he wrote the screenplay, not so much. I don't think that's always true. There's plenty of them he's written the screenplay for that are great, but that was kind of like one of those jokes for a long time where he writes novels that everyone loves. They're made into movies that people really, really love, only if they're the movies of the ones that he didn't write the screen, you know, that kind of thing. Another one that comes to mind immediately is like a Neil Gaiman kind of character who hit the scene as a comic book writer, but has since been a showrunner and written movies and novels and every, you know, which way. You said Kevin Smith is a really popular one. Ta-Nehisi Coates was one I would think of too, who was really best known for like reporting and for essays and then went on to write a really well thought of, you know, comic books for Black Panther, things like that. But yes, having ideas, being able to be a creative, being able to tell a story, you can find people to help you craft it into the shape it needs to be for the format right. of the media which you're going to put it. If you have a good idea to start with and have all the story beats and have an outline and know how to get from point A to point B, that doesn't mean I want the author of my favorite book to be the person who writes the screenplay for it. I'd like them to be involved, but when it's all said and done, you know, a good storyteller is a good storyteller. And as long as you employ people who are experts in like the medium in which you want to deliver the content, like you're going to get there. So.
No, very true. And that's why I love this topic, because again, I know it's something you're passionate about, but I like the idea. I think you brought up the good point there is if it's a good story, the studio, the publisher, whatever is going to pay for it and get you the help to make it fit the material that you're putting it for. And that just, I think, allows, like I said, for it to expand now into so many more hands than it used to. And let's not pretend like right now, all eyes are on Black Panther, even on the comic book side right now, because obviously of the recent events around it all. So making sure there's a good story there going forward, I think is very important.
Yeah. And with the exception of like people who not necessarily aren't creatives, like I'm not talking about executives making changes or people giving notes who aren't creatives, but when it's all said and done, when it comes to creating something and making it better and making it stronger, at no point did more voices, more diversity, more people having input on it make a thing less good, unless it was someone who had no business having their hand in it in the first place.
No, I get what, like I get what you're saying.
When the guy from marketing sends a note, like maybe ignore that one, unless right. maybe it's a good idea. But at the same time, like adding more voices, having more people have a hand in it, typically tends to make better content. So
for sure, for sure.
We had some awesome. We had some big ones today. We had some
I liked strong- them. I liked them. Some strong topics, some big things happening in the industry. Obviously we'll cover more on the entertainment side of things going forward as we head into the summer, where the blockbuster stuff all gets put in front of us. Fast and Furious, for example. Oh yeah, F9. I don't know why my camera's so blurry right now, but it is. Anyways, that's it for our main topics on this week's episode of Versus. If you have suggestions for what we should talk on, head on over to wherever you get your Project Nerd podcast or video content and comment and tell us what you want to hear us talk about and maybe even lead it into a debate. But before we close, we've got to do something we always do here on Versus, And it's time for some quick hits. Meep, meep, meep. Still got to download that that like horn there.
Hey, horn.
There we go. Right. Let's race.
What's the first one? Give it to me.
Snake Eyes G.I. Joe Origins trailer drops. Are we getting hyped for this franchise again? Because the trailer actually looks all right. Or have we just accepted the fact that Paramount's going to destroy everything Hasbro has ever created for our childhoods?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. It's, I don't know. They've made some really bad G.I. Joe movies. I like Henry Golding a lot. Maybe this is the one that turns it around. I don't know anyone who's necessarily involved in it that makes me like, oh, this is going to be great. I mean, the director of it, he made the like second and third Divergent movies, which were real bad. He made RIPD, which I didn't love, but he did make Red, which I really like.
I like Red a lot.
Red is really good. Here's the thing. This is the other problem with this one is this is one of those ones. This movie is one of those ones that filmed like 2 years ago and has been in the can for like they recently apparently reports are they went back and did some reshoots this year to like touch some stuff up. But this movie wrapped shooting over a year ago. It started shooting in 2019. So it's one of those ones that I feel like if it was if they thought they had a winner on their hand, we would have heard more about it. Until just now, like we knew that it's not that we didn't know this movie was being made, but I think the marketing push would have been a little stronger than, oh, by the way, in 2 months, here's a G.I. Joe movie, by the way.
Right. That's a fair point. So. I, on the other hand, which isn't necessarily a disagreement, I just feel anything Paramount touches from Hasbro turns to crap. So, yeah,
you're probably right. Wonder Girl number one reviews are rolling in and people are praising DC's hero Yara Flor. Is this title something you're interested in reading?
I am. This kind of goes back to the Wednesday thing with my daughter. It's something I can introduce her to. She's really gotten excited about a lot of the Ms. Marvel stuff, especially when you added in the new Marvel family characters. So I'm hoping this is something that DC can do as they're introducing some new leads, I guess. Some of the characters have been around. So if not so much for me, more so for my daughter. I don't know. What about you?
I'm interested to see what they do with it. This is a boat that I think DC has always missed. They've been behind Marvel when it comes to these like cool, young representative. I mean, and Marvel's had misses at it on their own. Don't get me wrong, but Marvel did some really cool things when it came to like the Ultimate series, especially like the introduction of like Miles Morales and, you know, Kamala Khan and stuff like that. DC has always had young heroes, but the focus has always been on the big three, the Justice League, this and that. And a lot of times DC will lean into like the darker stories and stuff like that. I'm excited to see them try and break out of that mold and be like, no, we're going to mess with some classic characters, or we're going to pass on some mantles in a way that's not, let's pass the lantern ring between the same five guys for 20 years, you know, that kind of thing.
So exactly.
I'm excited to see some new names, some new characters take on not necessarily the Wonder Woman mantle, but she's a girl from Boise, Idaho, who's going to do some cool stuff. So it's exciting.
Right. Love, Death and Robots is back. 8 new episodes dropped. We should get 8 more later this year. Have you checked them out yet, Tyler?
I have not watched them yet. I'm going to make some time. It's probably going to be a single sit down binge, but I am in like a middle of a 7-day stretch at work. So it's going to be a while until I have time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you of my favorites, Snow in the Desert. Just looks unbelievable. There's parts where you're looking at your screen. Don't even believe it's computer animated. The Drowned Giant, though, I think is a strong story, but they're all pretty fun. It just felt way too short this time around. So,
okay. So I have exciting news. Probably one of the things that I've been most excited about that's come out in the last couple of weeks. It's been 10 years in the making, but my friends, Attack the Block 2 is a go. Joe Cornish is back. John Boyega is back. I don't know who else is back, but those two guys are back. How excited are you about this?
Is it only been 10 years? It feels like
it's 2011 was when it came out. Yeah.
Okay. Feels like it's been longer, which should tell you that
more than 10 years ago. I mean, John Boyega is what? He's 29.
Listen,
so more than 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, he would have been like still in high school.
Yeah. I don't know how old I am these days, Tyler. So Point being is that if it feels like it's been longer than 10 years, then that means, yes, I'm ready for the sequel. And I think you already gave us the answer, but if you wanted to say it one more time, Tyler, are you excited for Attack the Block
2? Oh my God, I'm so pumped for this movie.
There you go.
I love Attack the Block 1. That was one of my favorite movies of the early 2010s, and I've seen it I don't know how many times, so...
It's a fun movie for sure. Batgirl appears to be in motion again. Batgirl, as in the movie, this time with your Bad Boys for Life directors at the helm. It's been on again, off again, on again. Are we getting excited, Tyler? Or are we just waiting for some bad news from Warner Brothers and DC again?
I mean, this is only the first or second time they've hired directors for this movie. So I expect them to fire them and hire new ones at least 3 or 4 more times before it goes into production. Okay. Isn't that how it goes? If it's not Zach or Patty, they go through 12 before the movie gets made.
It seems to be that way.
I'm trying to give them a chance, but they just keep effing it up, my man. Every time I give them another chance, they just mess it up again. So
don't go breaking my heart.
Listen, I'm almost giving up on Matt Reeves at this point. So we'll see what happens.
Well, tell me a little bit about Matt Reeves. What else is he up to these days?
So for those of you who don't know, this was another one that really caught my eye. I'm not going to get too excited because it's a little bit of column A, column B. But speaking of Batman, they just announced there is a new series being worked on jointly between Cartoon Network and HBO Max, which all owned by Warner Media. It is a new Batman animated series called Batman Caped Crusader. Executive producers include J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves, the director of the upcoming Batman, and Bruce Timm, creator of the original Batman the Animated Series. Are we on board with this?
I mean, I'm on board for anything Batman.
All things animated. Batman. And all right. Things Batman. We're going to watch it. So.
Right. Until it proves me wrong. I think what's really exciting here, though, that we're catching on is we're getting more and more of those pieces of that bad robot J.J. Abrams deal with Warner, seeing some of these DC projects. So I know there's the Justice League Dark series being talked about, this and all that. I'm excited because we're starting to see those announcements. So as awesome as it is to get Batman, it also is a domino in a series of dominoes. I'm ready to fall because
We also had an announcement for the Superman animated series, same HBO Max Cartoon Network joint project. Superman's getting a series. Obviously, Harley Quinn's coming back for series 3 at some point. And once again, proving that everything else that DC does wrong, it's hard for they don't make bad animated things, at least not recently. And not, I mean, DC animated stuff is always almost great. And my only concern about Batman the Caped Crusader is I don't know if you want that airing around the same time that Harley Quinn is, because I don't think you can top it.
That's fair. I'd love that show too. So,
so good.
Before we close, Tyler, let's talk a little bit about the book club happening this month.
Hey, for those who aren't aware, we started a new podcast. It hasn't aired yet, but we are prepping for it right now. It is The Book Plug from Project Nerd. Our first book for the month of May is Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, best known as the author of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. It is a fantastic book, 270-some pages long, Hugo-nominated novel. Pick it up, read it, join us for some discussion. We got a Discord channel. We're going to have a panel of various Project Nerd personalities to discuss the book once we've all finished it towards the end of the month. And hopefully here soon we'll be announcing books for the next couple months as well. But you should be reading. And if you're going to read, why not read this book along with us? And then we can all talk about it together. It's going to be super fun. And trust me, you will not regret it. It's a very good book. I even have Iggy reading it, and apparently they're fighting over it at his house. Who's the farthest along at this point? Who's going to finish first?
Probably Orion, my son, because he's been done with school for a couple of weeks, so he gets to sit there and read it. However, it's hard because anytime I lay down at night, the book is never at my nightstand. It's one of the other nightstands, unfortunately. But we are all reading it, and as you can see right below me, there's the address you can go to get a link to the book, a link to the Discord. Check it out. Talk with us. We need some more discussion. It is the first month, so it's light, obviously, on discussion. So we need you in there talking to us about it.
And I picked a really easy, really short, quick read book. I will tell you, when this book came out, I sat down and read it in one sitting. So if you're someone who reads a lot, you can 100% read this book in, 6-7 hours tops, even if you're a slow reader. Trust me on this one.
You know what?
And if you're not someone, and if you're not someone who reads, the audiobook is narrated by Chilty Ejiofor, and it's a fantastic narration. So.
I'm going to point out I am the only one home this evening right now, so maybe I'll grab that book after we're done here and race ahead. We'll see. But yeah, book club, check it out. Head on over to Project Nerd, find it. We got all the links going on there. So awesome. I'm excited for it. We're going to have to peg down in the next week or so when we're going to do that live stream.
We do have the live streams. I'm excited. Right. I need everyone to finish it first, and then we can talk about it.
We'll work on it.
I've already read it twice. I read it once when it came out, once when I announced it for this. I may read it again just to be prepped for the live stream if you guys aren't going to hurry up and finish it or what.
Good. You got to lead the discussion. So
I mean, yes, I'm ready for this. Don't worry.
Awesome. This is it for Versus, along with our other Project Nerd podcast. You can head over to projectnerd.com podcast, but just head
on over project-nerd.com.
There you go. But head on over to Project Nerd and just check out our navigation as we've divided our content into watch and listen. So you can also catch Versus under our watch tab, where we have a lot of other great original video series happening right now for you, this being one of them. But if you do just like the audio, Versus, as many of our other series are also wherever you can get our podcasts, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, and a few other places. So yeah, I think those were some great topics today. I know we didn't argue, but these were some big things that are happening in the world. And again, we got Fast and Furious 9 around the corner, so I bet you we can fight over that. Although I think we're both good at it, but I'll try to pretend like I liked it since I'm doing a whole nother podcast.
I feel like you like a lot of those, though.
I respect the fact that everyone has a scene that is so beyond possible that it's worth watching, whether it be Jason Statham fighting with a baby wearing earmuffs in an airplane to this new one where apparently they're going to launch a car into space. I'm in for that shit. So that's it. All right. That's it again for Project Nerds Versus. Tyler, Iggy, we're out. We'll catch you next time. Actually, you'll catch Q and Tyler next time, and then Q and I next time. And then Tyler and I will do this again as we're heading in the summer. So we got plans. We're going to do other stuff instead of just talk to you guys. Gosh. Anyways, that's it. We'll catch you next time.